wow, I can really help a lot of people out there in interior design and help them grow their business and help them unlock their own value and help them do so many different things that people don't necessarily think of accountants as being able to do. We've already shown that we can do that. And we already have waiting lists and we can't hire fast enough. And they're all good problems. And there's a whole lot of people out there that really need this. And then if the housing market crashes and contractors are out of work, you know, then it's like, then I'll just be able to lean into another vertical. Right.
I thought you said niche, but I heard you say niche earlier.
It is niche.
Yeah. I think they're both spelled V-E-R-T-I-C-A-L. I think that's how they're both spelled because that's a common way of everybody saying it and nobody has to argue about the pronunciation. Mm-hmm. So verticals. Let's go deep into verticals. Hello and welcome. We are all the sons and daughters of CPAs. Join us as we question the current state of the accounting and tax industry with the next generation of professionals leading this space. We are the change agents in an industry fraught with money and inertia. Let's begin the Sons of CPAs with your only host today, Scott Scarano, and a very special guest, Marissa McKinney-Jones, MMJ.
MMJ, artist formerly known as Eminem.
Artist formerly known as Eminem. That just is alliteration to its fullest, right? Like he does all of that, but that's a rapper. You're not a rapper, are you?
At Moonlight as a rapper.
But it's right. More of like a stage name.
Marilyn
stage.
Monroe, Marissa McKinney, just wait.
I know. McKinney's yeah. Your stage name, I think. Okay. Well, let's really, for real. What do you do?
What do I do? Well, I
What's the name of your
run...
firm? I should introduce the name of your firm, right?
Sure. Yeah. Right now I have two firms for CAS, different services. So one is interior design, and that's a very specific vertical. I have a partner on that one. And then I have Logistis, which is like the OG 1.0, which is like my catch-all firm. It's my baby, but primarily our client base is professional services, creative agencies.
Professional services, creative agencies. That's a pretty big, professional services is a pretty big genre, right?
Like, yeah. I know, like you think of it, kind of think like medical or dental or something like that, but definitely not. It's more creative agencies, social media, PR, marketing, scouts, talent, things like that. Influencers, a lot of that stuff. And then, you know, being in LA, of course, that's where I started. It was a lot of client opportunities for that particular industry.
Yeah. I mean, everywhere you go now to a certain degree, there's influencers for everything now.
Yeah.
You know, there's influencers in our accounting space. I think like people are referred to as influencers and do you have a firm? No. Do you do anything? No. All right. What do you do? I'm an influencer. Oh, wow. Okay. Let's have you on the podcast, right?
That was funny. My friend, we were this weekend, we were in Big Sur. We were having a conversation about, well, what do most people in LA want to do? And somebody leans in and is like, everybody wants to be an influencer.
Yep. Influencers don't do anything, right? It's just do. You just be you, right? That's an awesome way to be. Like, I think if anybody paid me to be me, then I wouldn't be anything, right? I would be an influencer. I don't really know what I am. Like, I'm not an
entertainer. You're trying to tap into the influencer market right now with your podcast.
I think
influence all kinds of accountants.
Keyword, trying. And I'm not really even trying. I just want to.
No, you're succeeding. Hey, you're growing.
Growing my.
Better day by day.
Growing my accounting firm. That's my head is back into growing the firm. And my head is like, I've been fucking around. Or I've been messing around all year. Now I got to put my head back to the books. I think I need to. At least that's what I'm telling me.
If we started recording before 4:20, I would have been all right.
You're a little high right now. I'm going to read everything and you can ad lib.
Yeah, I like this.
Okay.
Let's go. Tax Bandits ad.
Tax Bandits is a modern, full-service tax filing platform. File 1099s, 941s, W-2s, 1095s, and many more additional forms with Tax Bandits' sleek, modern interface. With a few clicks of a button, you can upload your client's tax information directly into Tax Bandits, either with a direct integration with Xero, QuickBooks Online, or use a CSV. Once the data is in Tax Bandits, you can check the recipient's tin with best-in-class tin verification, and then safely and securely deliver to your clients or your client's customers their tax forms.
So that's a great use case. I think I'm going to do that. Tell me about the verification.
Is it secure? It's secure. And when you're in-app, it does it for you automatically. Apparently, you can only like data verify 3 times before it'll deliver. So they'll verify it twice. They figured all that shit out. They'll also mail out your 1099 forms for you for additional fee. Everyone has those clients. They won't ever open their email for the 1099s. You got to mail it to them. You just click a button. Tax Advance will handle that for you.
So is it built for accounting firms?
Tax Advance is also built for accounting firms. They have completely redesigned their user interface to make it easy for you and your team members to quickly and efficiently deliver tax forms to your clients. Some accounting firm features include managing all your clients from one login. You can have multiple user permissions for your staff, real-time client communication in-app with clients, bulk distribution of recipient codes, and multiple payment options for your firm.
Well, that was recipient copies, not codes. But we don't have a code for them, do we?
No.
So visit TaxBandits, 1099.com. I don't even know their website.
It's literally on the next line you're supposed to read.
So get started today by visiting TaxBandits.com.
So if you were to like put your day in percentages, what does that look like for you?
Wow, this has turned into the podcast of asking me questions. That's a good question. I think the percentages have to be sleep is the highest percentage. And that's what I've really been trying to, like, if I had a time block for sleep, I've been trying to do that for like 10-hour time block. Because usually I only get 8 hours of sleep if I have a 10-hour time block. So that's my first one. And then it's working out, has a bit of a time block, and then sleeping has a, no, I already said sleeping, eating. Has a bit of a time block too. And I have to make time for those so I can work better. So it's a good question. I mean, because then work falls into the middle there. Like I still haven't taken a shower yet because I was working out and I had a bunch of calls and now we have a podcast. How about you?
I tried to do a twofer. So I walked into the office today to try and get my exercise on my way to this padded room for the podcast.
Thank you for being in a padded room. There's no.
I don't know if it's helping or not.
No,
high-tech mic, but
if you don't have echoing, the rest of it you could work with, right? That's the echoing has been hard. I edited the Ian's episode from Carbon, and he had a lot of echoing, so I tried to use our soundproofing technology tool called Studio Sound, and some of it sounds auto-tuned, so you won't sound auto-tuned. But for anybody that listened to that one months ago, which was just released today. Big Sur. I want to hear more about that. No, that's not our topic, but
I want to be more about that.
Yeah. Really? So nice. How long have you been going to Big Sur? Like what's your connection there? You live close to it or?
Yeah, for us it was like a 3.5-hour drive to where we were going. My husband is from Monterey, which is about an hour north of that. So sometimes when we have the time, we just take the coast up and do the Big Sur thing. This weekend, it was just about going to Big Sur. And I didn't have any service. Big Sur never does. There's no place you can go to get service. It's really incredible. Second I got into this no service zone, I realized how long it had been since I was planning on spending a weekend in the woods with no service. And I was immediately freeing. It was pretty great. You relinquished all notions of what you're supposed to be doing and you just surrender to time. It's cool.
I love that. Like an unplugged, that's literally unplugged. And that's what happens when I go to Mexico too, is you forget how long you've been unplugged and you're enjoying it. And then when you have to plug in, it's like, at first it could be a dopamine release. Oh, I get to check all my stuff. That's what a lot of people do. But then it just turns like it's a matter of your mindset of how you're looking at it too. I don't like getting plugged back in. I like staying unplugged, but you can't. Like I don't think you can.
Well, I don't do any social media myself. I mean, my companies have social media, which are minimally maintained. Yeah, I don't do any of that stuff myself because it's just not something that I want to add into my percentages of my day.
Yeah, so your company does it and you don't. And I don't like I don't like social media at all. I try not to be on those, but now because of this silly podcast that I have to post my episodes, and I'm paying attention to that now. And I never paid attention to it before, but it's like,
okay. So when it comes to like work, how much of your day is work and how much of your day is podcast? Or
okay. That was the question. Yeah. I think.
Well, I mean, that was a part of it, which you probably didn't get from me.
So no, you didn't. So I think I'm spending like 4 or 5 hours a week just on this podcast, and then the rest of it's just work. And I don't know how many hours that is. Like, I don't really track my time. I just have a lot of meetings and a lot of stuff, email. That's what I spend most of my time doing. I think I spend definitely more than 5 hours in my email, but that's not just in your email, right? You got to pick this up. Okay, look into this, do this. And then what I think might be an hour checking my email turns into 3 or 4 on most days.
But you're a carbon user. Shouldn't it be not living in your email?
I'm living in my triage. That's what I'm doing. And when I'm in my triage, I got to jump to a work item from there and look at the work item. And then it's like, I can't get through all of it. So, and usually it's just bigger things that are coming up for me. I'm not really in the client work. It's communications, and it's just context shifting too. Within that triage is where I live. I don't even go into my Gmail anymore. But how about you? Are you using Carbon too? Or?
Yeah, I've used Carbon for a long time.
So how much time do you spend in your triage?
Well, I don't do client work either anymore. So the time that I spend in my triage is more for growth strategy stuff. So like, that's kind of where I spend the majority of my time.
So your head's above water, right? You're not
swimming with the fishes. My head is above water for now. Yeah, I mean, we're a small company, so one of the wheels falls off, I'm pretty screwed. But so far, I've been able to maintain.
You've got to put the wheel back on first, right? Yeah. And that's your job. Like,
hopefully, I can find a nice wheel to patch back on there. But my wheels are pretty sturdy. They're the Michelin wheels, I guess.
Well, at least you're not causing the wheels to fall off. I tend to be the one that causes the wheels to fall off in my firm, and then I tell somebody else to fix it. How did you get started in this? You're not a CPA, right?
I'm not a CPA. Definitely not a daughter of a CPA. Okay. No. In fact, nobody in my family understands what I do. And maybe that's why I have such a hard time when people ask, what do you do? Accounting? I know that's the most boring answer. And I definitely don't have a good elevator pitch for when people ask that question.
What's the next question you get after you say accounting? Do they say, do you do taxes?
Yep. And they say, do you do taxes? Are you a CPA? And then I say no, and then they really look at me confused.
What do you do?
I didn't understand the first part, and then they really didn't understand the second part. I went to school for accounting, and then I worked in finance, and nothing ever stuck. And then I ended up just kind of always having that in my back pocket. And so when I had my first daughter, that's when I started my own business. I was working executive assistant when I moved to LA, and I was also doing their accounting, primarily bookkeeping and things like
LA
that.
From where did you
from
move
from? Florida.
To?
I was in Florida for a while. Yeah.
Florida. Florida. All right.
No.
Not out of Florida. Girl? No.
No, okay, I'm from Santa Barbara. Yeah.
Oh, so you're back. All right.
So when I graduated from UCSB in Santa Barbara, I worked at various companies here and wasn't really in, I worked in mostly like hedge fund companies and things like that. I wasn't really a big fan of that particular type of work. And a lot of the stuff was very remedial data entry level positions. I know all the kids that I graduated with were all moving on to the big fours in LA. And I just heard what a nightmare it was because they'll stick you in audit and you'll hate it and then you'll leave. And I was like, maybe that's not for me. So, and I worked for some tax preparers here and I helped them as their assistant. And then I came back to it. And as a business owner, it's like, I just kind of grew organically. And then all of a sudden was like, oh shoot, I'm getting a little big, really not intending on starting a company.
Yeah.
Then having like 3 or 4 employees and not really feeling like I had a good grasp on what people were doing and how to manage all of that. And how to have those quality controls set up. You just figure it out. If you're tenacious and you have that attitude, I think anybody can do it. So when I got to about 4 employees, I was like, okay, if all these people are counting on me, as their boss and to provide them their own livelihood for their families and everything else that comes along with being a boss. You know, I really need to be intentional about what I want to do here.
And then, I have a question about that. Yeah. So I don't know when I really decided I'm not the boss of this, because I answer to everybody. I answer to my employer. Like, I'm not even the boss at my house. My wife is, you know, and I'm not the boss at the office. Like, I do have to make some decisions, but most of the time, every decision I make is in the context of the client or the employees. Mm-hmm. I'm not my own boss for damn sure. Like, I'm their, well, okay, wait, I'm not my own boss. I'm not their boss. Like, that's what I've been trying to figure out. Like, who's the boss here? Right. Yeah. So being a boss, right. At that point, did you still consider yourself the boss?
So, yeah, I never felt like, oh, now I have a choice whether I want to do this anymore. It was like, no, people are counting on me. Now you don't have a choice. Now you just got to do it. Being where I'm at, I'm able to be a little more nimble. I have the right butts and the right seats. And during COVID, when we kind of downsized because a lot of our clients were shut down, I was able to take a moment, take a breath, and just figure out, okay, I don't know what I want to do next. I don't know what I'm super interested in learning about. And I don't know what I want to focus on for my client base. And then just sitting on that and being okay with that for a little bit. And then finally having something that sparks my interest come along.
I love that part. Yeah. I mean, that's more or less you're internally, you know, trying to figure out how you want to go in the future. So the other stuff doesn't feel as taxing and as difficult. If you don't know where you're headed, and you're trying to make all these decisions, you don't really have that guiding light. But for some people, when you get very introspective, it's about enjoying the space that you're at too. It's not about the struggle to get there, but it's about enjoying that struggle, because there is no there. You're just climbing.
And balancing that with your clients' needs and your staff's needs. In a service-based firm, it's like you balance your desires with their needs, and you find some middle ground on that. So keeping a pulse on how your employees are feeling or what they want to do, and pairing that with the direction that you want to go in. And so that was probably 3 years ago where I was like, okay, I need to get my butt in gear and make this more of a solid foundation to support the growth that I plan on delivering. And then we just had this giant like client base for interior designers. And so I'm trying to do these like marketing campaigns, and it was just getting too muddled together, right? Like, you kind of have to be specific and develop a niche or at least a focus. And it allows you to speak to your clients better.
Does it allow you to go deeper with the clients too?
It totally allows you to go deeper with the clients. Yeah. And you can cookie cutter it out, and you can have these service offerings that are very specific to the industry, but very easy to implement for your own firm, because you just do over and over and over a formula that you can teach people, and it's not processes. So top heavy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So did your firm have that, or were you kind of everywhere across the board at that point?
So our team was basically like servicing all different kinds of people, and then it was all getting mixed up. And then finally we had this, you know, this big base of interior designers. And I had one employee who was kind of a rock star. She was like, I love working with the interior designers. You know, I would love to have our own division in this. And I was like, well, let's just break off and do a whole nother company in this. I'll make you a partner. You can basically build this with your ambition, and you can help me in the areas that I need help with in terms of my time constraints and being spread too thin, running a general service-based practice. So,
and that was Logistis was more or less the general service. Then?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because it was like, oh, people would come and, you know, we would just take them if we liked them.
You know? No, that's a certain degree, that's still what I'm doing at my firm. We never hit that point where we switched off. So this is really cool. So what do you call the interior design firm again?
So it's Logistis for Designers.
I like how you just added for designers.
Yeah, totally two different companies, just share the name, basically. But
do you have employees that bridge the gap between the two?
We have one person who kind of, they're two different people for our taxes and sales tax, but they, you know, they go over back and forth. But in terms of the
clock actual, in and clock out almost,
yeah,
is that what they're okay? Different carbon instances too for each
different
one?
Carbons, yep.
Ooh,
but luckily, okay. Carbon was able to, so all the templates that we built in my first company, Carbon was able to just copy those into the next one and roll over clients. So that we gave them a list. They were able to roll over all of our existing clients into the new Carbon.
The data too. Were you able to pull in historical? Yeah. That's awesome. Everything.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, actually, you know what? I take that back. I'm sorry. I don't think they were able to pull through like old emails and things like that. Yeah. Because it was associated with a different email address. But everything else they were
able to do. Notes and things like that. Anything that you did. Okay. That makes sense. Do you have an acronym for the for interior? LFD, maybe?
Yep.
That's what you do?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Like I got clients that have started as one business, and then when they do another one, it's whatever they call it, acronym, easiest way to split them out. So
The other one I'm playing with is Fetty Wallet. Fetty Wallet.
Fetty Wallet. It's like Fetty Wap, but Fetty Wallet. Mm-hmm. All right. I don't know what Fetty means. What's the Fetty part of it?
It means money.
Okay. I didn't know Fetty meant money. That's a new thing for me. Like, is
really?
Fetty?
You didn't know that of all people?
I'm really big into rap too.
What about like that Freddie Gibbs album, Fetty?
Oh, man, I don't even know that one either. Like, this is a whole other culture. Like, I want to move to California. Like,
when we get off this podcast, go listen to that album. It's like one of my workout albums.
I can make that
like hardcore the gangster rap.
That's what I wanted. Our intro music, I wanted to be more of like a trap type. And he said that the guy that my friend from high school, which we both listen to rap and he makes the music, he says your audience is not going to like that. And it turns out that the audience does like what he did end up making for that. So I don't know. We can listen to it. I was going to say I can make the soundtrack to your episode more or less gangster rap, but Well, I already have an explicit rating on this, so we can say whatever the fuck we want. To a certain degree. So then,
I try not to use the bad words when I can. Well,
I'm trying to keep it real, and I'm also trying to keep it clean, and that's hard for me. I can't keep it real and keep it clean at the same time unless I really stop cursing in my regular life, and that's not going to happen, not even in front of my kids.
I was about to say, when you curse and you're in front of your kids, it just naturally comes out. And so you have to kind of cut it out, you know, cold turkey.
Yeah, but I don't mind cursing in front of them either. Like, I don't care if other people...
Well, your kids are teenagers, right?
Well, no, I mean, I got a four-year-old.
Oh, you do?
And a second grader.
How many children did you have?
I got three.
Yeah, I got a little high since we started reading. And I kind of forgot where we were at. RelayFi.com/sonsofcpas. We have a URL.
With Relay, your clients get a smart operating account that includes up to 20 checking accounts without fees or minimums and MasterCard debit cards that can be issued online in seconds.
That actually was a pretty good read right there. So we just signed on a new client. They're overseas. They're in the UK. They're starting a US arm, and we're setting them up on Relay as their bank and bill pay provider. They don't have a ton of bills, just different minimal things that we're going to handle for them. We're going to do it through Relay. We got single or multi-step approval rules to auto sync the paid bills back to the client's GL, which is in our case zero. It's refreshing. Very profitable.
That's beautiful.
What about you?
We're trying to figure out a way to implement this because I do think it's going to save a bunch of time. The biggest problem with Xero right now is the online banking feeds. And when a feed goes down, it's a pain in the ass. Well, if you have an online bank that was designed with a direct feed, that in itself saves so much time. We sell the shit out of this app.
Closing arguments here.
I have nothing to say other than I'm glad that you're high and you told everyone that because that makes me feel a lot better about my life. And I like Relay. We're going to use it more. You guys should too.
I think I make you feel better about your life. You see how bad things could be.
I didn't say that, but that's what I was thinking.
So I think you should just visit relayfi.com/sonsofcpas. That's sons with an S S-O-N-S of CPAs with an S, CPAs. There's three S's in there. You can't get it wrong. Sons of CPAs. If you're listening to this podcast and you haven't heard of Relay, Relay Financial, check it out.
These ad reads, I mean, this is a real ad. They're getting their money's worth. We have our own code. Please use the code, people. That's how we make money. So
the code doesn't make us any money. This ad was paid for up front. What
but
it
the
does
more people
do, though,
who use the code, that means they're going to do our ad more.
Go to relayfi.com/sons of CPAs.
Figure out what my morals are these days. Yikes. So, yeah. So back to running a vertical, right? And getting into the stripper vertical.
I did not think about doing that at all.
You have a client that merges into that industry more or less. And
I have a couple clients in this, I mean, like bigger names in the space. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that's, yeah, I'm not looking at the smaller names because strippers individually probably don't make enough, you know, to
also, is that a PC term? Do people say that anymore? I think they're adult entertainers.
So entertainers in the entertainment world, I just had a conversation right before with somebody that is in that world, and that's exciting. Like, he has rappers as his clientele too, and other entertainers, but that's, you know, that's a whole other world too. But all of these are worlds, right? So getting into verticals, it should be something that you're interested in too. And are you interested in interior design?
Oh, I'm interested in interior design in the sense that I think it's cool what they do. And I actually don't have the brain for it. So I have a really difficult time, whether it's doing my own stuff or my own house or things like that, or I'm not the most artistically creative person, but I know what I like, right? So
I can relate to that more than you.
I do like interior design because if my house is a mess, my brain is a mess. I'm kind of OCD about cleaning. I'm kind of a minimalist in a way. I don't like clutter. I don't like knickknacks. I really like things clean and organized. And I like to feel good in my space. And if I'm in a space where my surroundings don't feel right, then my brain does not function as well as it could. I mean, I'm into interior design in the sense that, like, they really create some beautiful things, and it changes your mood, it changes your feeling, it changes how you look at the world. And I'm not into it, like, doing it at all. And talk about, like, unlocking value. They know, oh, I feel weird charging somebody $200 to pick out a sofa. And I'm like, yeah, but I can't pick out a sofa. I have a hard time with
that. Ours is broken. Like, we have one of those mechanical ones, and I can't get myself to pick one out because I'm always going to figure out, did I pick the wrong one? And this is the opportunity cost of knowing that there might be a better one out there that you haven't seen. And that's what I fear my whole life, that I pick the wrong thing. I can't, so I appreciate what you're saying because I love, like, what interior design, the end result, but getting there, I could never do it. I hate working from home because it's a fucking mess. It's terrible. Like, there's things just piled up everywhere. There's stuff that we used to use that I don't think we'll ever need to use, but I can't throw it away. And I don't know what to do. I need an interior designer, I think. That's what I was trying to get at. Maybe I could work from home when I have a better space and my brain can sit and relax because I'm just thinking about the stuff piled up and being in an office that's done for me. So I don't know.
Yeah. Puts you in a really weird place.
It does. Yeah. So mental space is kind of where my head's at all the time. And that's why I think our vertical will eventually be psychiatrist, because I need one personally. That's the guy that I was talking to about entertainment industry. He plays guitar and he does things for his church, but he's not an entertainer. And he said it's not his place really to be talking about the creative aspect. He's talking about the business side of it. And I think that to a certain degree, it's like we're all frustrated artists in one way or another, and whatever we can do to make money, then we'll do it. But not all of us are frustrated artists, but I think I am. I'm a frustrated artist.
Yeah.
I always like the arts, liberal arts, the arts and everything else.
Yes. So I'm going through a giant shift in my attitude towards the arts. I realized that I'm just in this last year, I'm really starting to have this whole new appreciation for different art forms that I've never had before. And I've always had an appreciation for it, but it's a deeper level because I think because I've been in the grind for so long in my own life, two little ones and work, when I have an opportunity to go to an art museum, or when I have an opportunity to go to a concert or something like that, it really feels like a luxury. And then it kind of gets you thinking about the fact that it is a luxury. And if you have some allowance in your brain for that luxury, like, you know, you're in a good place. And I see why it has this certain stigma of being a pretentious thing, because of the fact that it is a luxury. And some people might have some sort of animosity towards that.
That's a good observation. I never really thought of it like that. The reason it has the stigma is because I don't have the time to pay attention to this art. Yeah. Why are they spending so much money on it? But then I can appreciate it now if I have the time to appreciate it. There's a deeper level of human psychology to look at and why some people resent it versus, and some people always think they resent it because they can't do it. And that's not always the case. Some people more or less resent it, not because they can't do it, but because they don't have the time. And maybe that's to a certain degree too.
Because it's like that fifth level of Maslow's hierarchy, you know, it's like that creative self-actualizing place that a lot of people can't get to because they have to have their basic needs met first. And if you're not able to achieve all of those things below there, you're not able to have that same level of appreciation for it.
Where does money fall on Maslow's hierarchy?
It falls into probably like the first or second, right? Gosh, you're going to make me...
Well, we should tell this to my co-host because I always say...
Safety, right? That's the second one? Yeah.
I always say to my co-host, it's about money until it's not. And that's the metaphor I'm trying to drive is it is about money for our clients. It's about money for us. It's about money for everybody until it's not. And when it's not, then it's about them. It's about all this fluffy stuff that he likes to talk about. But for him, it was never about the grind to build the firm. His dad built the firm and he's stepping in and he's just trying to figure stuff out. So he doesn't see the grind aspect of the money part of it. Maybe he does. But
a wise person once told me, people who earn their own money are not afraid to spend money. And people who were given money or were raised with money are a little bit cheaper because they don't know how to make it. You know, they don't know how to create it. They hold it to this high pinnacle of worth. They have a hard time wrapping their minds about the
creation. Where do Jews fall in there? Because a lot of Jews, like me and him and others, we have no problem making money. We have no problem talking about money. I have problems spending money sometimes, and I know how to make it, but I still have problems spending it.
Yeah.
So where do we fall?
Do you have problems spending it on the things that you want to spend it on?
Absolutely not. And he doesn't. Absolutely not. I just have problems finding value in everything, you know, so it's, I'm not necessarily cheap. I'm just more or less, I have to see the value before I spend a lot of money on it. And I will spend money on stuff, but balancing all of that too and figuring out. So yeah, that's a good, it's like The Psychology of Money is a book that I got recently. It was recommended to me.
Oh yeah, I have that book.
Yeah.
I haven't read it yet.
So I just got it. Let's start a book club. Me and you can read it.
Oh my gosh, I would love that. Yeah.
I do plan on reading that though. I think
my triage.
the maze in there. I'm always stuck in that maze. There's a maze on the cover. I get stuck in that maze sometimes, and I can't pull myself out of it because I try to think my way through that maze. Sometimes you can't think your way through a money maze. So let's go to the interior design and let's go back to verticals. So first. How do you spell,
Scott?
I know. So how do you spell, and I can probably count the times how many I've tried to get us back on track and I can't. How do you spell the word niche and niche?
Oh, gosh, spelling is like, I mean, spelling's like a foreign language to me. So niche is N-I-E-C-H-E, right? No? No, N-I-C-H-E.
And how do you spell niche?
With a... apostrophe thingy at the end. I don't know. Don't ask me spelling questions. That's not fair.
No, I pick on my co-host because it's niche. And I thought you said niche, but I heard you say niche earlier.
It is niche. Yeah.
I think they're both spelled V-E-R-T-I-C-A-L. I think that's how they're both spelled because that's a common way of everybody saying it and nobody has to argue about the pronunciation. So verticals. Let's go deep into verticals. You can go deeper with clients when you have a vertical.
Well, and I love when you have that cross alignment of like stuff that you're interested in. So you really, you get that personal fulfillment in serving certain verticals, right? And then also because you enjoy what you're doing, it services them as well, serves to their advantage.
if you're a user of what they're selling, then you can really appreciate it to another degree too. It's like, we have a lot of clients that have comic book stores, and I like comic books. I like all that world. So that was one of my ideas. I have a lot of ideas for verticals to go into, but then we never have enough clients to say, let's just do this. Like, we can't just get rid of all of our other clients too. So that's a difficult.
That's why the catch-all firm that I have was like nice, because, you know.
Is that your incubator for verticals?
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
I like it. So logistics is figuring out the logistics of verticals for you. So the next one, what's your next vertical? Your next niche?
I already told you.
You did?
Yes, I did. That's how we got on study. Just accounting for digital assets. I dove down into the blockchain rabbit hole, and I'm really having a hard time climbing back out of it.
And that's because explain first, define digital asset, because it's when I try to explain it to people, a lot of times they don't know what I'm talking about. So what is a digital asset first?
I'm really new to this. You're going to have me talking about it. Don't quote me on.
I'm not an expert. Right?
So I'm not an expert. Yeah. Yes, I'm trying to be. When I think of digital assets, I think that all that's encompassed in that. So not necessarily just NFTs. I also think of like the currencies and the stable coins and different technologies that are being developed, accounting technology in the space. So developing tech platforms and cryptocurrencies, then working with current cryptocurrencies, trading in digital assets, and accounting for those transactions.
So NFTs are art. Are you dealing with digital art?
Since our primary base here at our incubator is creative agencies. We have a lot of graphic designers and creative talent that does deal with NFTs, buying, selling, trading.
So a non-fungible token is an NFT, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because whenever I say digital assets, people go immediately, they go to NFT because that's the tangible. Totally. It's funny because it's not tangible, but it's the only tangible thing they can usually get to when they think of that.
I
try to bring it out of the spectrum to say anything that you can sell that has value, that is a passive source of income, is a digital asset. So it could be classes. So I tried to bring it in because we have a new client that's an artist, and she sells classes to teach people how to sell their art. And I see that as her digital asset, because she doesn't have to do anything with those. She just sells them, and then also sells her art too. So it's like, is that a digital asset? Are the classes?
I wouldn't think of it in terms of that. My definition might be different than your definition. And I think it's, for me, it was kind of a catch-all. It was kind of a catch-all for like what I was trying to convey when I was talking to people about what I want to do. Now that might get refined or tweaked, or I might have a more narrow perspective on our description.
The next time we have you on, maybe I'll have a co-host and we'll have a more detailed discussion about your new niche. But it's like, can you go vertical for creative agencies? If you say logistics is for professional services creatives, isn't creatives a very good niche to be in? A very good mm-hmm. vertical?
Yep. Yeah.
So why not logistics for creatives?
So I've kind of branded that for a long time, like for creatives and creative startups. What happens with logistics is a lot of people have always just come to me when they have an accounting problem and they want to get off on the right foot, right? Like, we have this really complex accounting situation. We have no idea, you know, we're the first of our kind doing something like this. Like, can you help us figure this out, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, one of our clients wanted to send invoices out and get collections in Bitcoin and Ethereum. So I found a software that would support that. And I had the Cannabis Cafe was one of our clients. It was the first national place where you could actually go consume cannabis, and then they would take your food order. First of its kind, never have been any licensing issues for that. And so that was really a unique challenge in and of itself, as long as it's fun for us.
Then you become logistics for uniques, and then you have a bunch of unique clients that all have unique problems. And then where do you make the most money on them? So then does it turn into
just charge a ton of money for it.
Well, right.
And I mean, with the people who have really special needs, like that's what we, you know, I mean, you can't afford to not Yeah, absolutely. So like we're pretty cookie cutter, except for what I call projects, because eventually we want to get it streamlined enough where they can take it off our hands and do it internally. Like we don't want those kind of really complex accounting jobs for a long time. Those are our projects. And we do, you know, we do periodic seat swaps in our company too, just to make sure that we are following a set of procedures that are in accordance with how we want to be as a firm and do they align with like our ultimate vision, especially like I said, once, you know, once you get into the verticals, like the interior design division is very much oriented at that, very specific about how we want to do things and
what seat swaps. Like, so what's a seat swap? I just like the name.
So, everybody needs to make sure that they can do other people's job if it's within their tier of what they're doing, right? So if you have two people working on a specific package, they should be able to jump into another client seamlessly, right?
Mm-hmm.
And do the same work for that client without any assistance or little to no assistance.
Is it stress testing the firm when you do that? Like, is it stress testing? Like if we lost somebody, would we be able to bring somebody else in?
A little bit of stress test, but also it's just to make sure that everything's aligned with how it should be. Stress test for that reason, but also, hey, is all your work set up perfect? There's so many benefits from it. The problem is when you don't have enough people who are doing the same type of work to seat swap. But other than that, periodically seat swapping a couple clients here and there, you don't do like a full overhaul of all your clients. Switch it up a little once in a while and make sure everything's running good and make sure they're all doing their job. And then the team will know if somebody else is dropping off.
I've been there. I just never labeled it seat swap. I like that. Like
I don't know. That was actually just on the fly right now. We don't have a technical term for it.
That is the technical term. You're going to take it over. Like you've already said it on air. So
yeah.
Everybody knows what's going to find you on the corner. Oh, you're the seat swap lady. I've been doing that at my firm. No, I that's not what I'm going to title this episode. It's not going to be seat swap. Although, like I am like the host right now, and you swapped me in the beginning, and you were interviewing me, so this could be a metaphor for the episode as a seat swap. So I don't even want to talk about Bitcoin or crypto or all that. That's just above my pay grade. Like I don't even understand. I understand all of it.
It's all I want to talk about, Scott.
I like the digital asset stuff and I like the NFT because it is something that I can think about and see. But whenever I get into the whole world of cryptocurrency and Bitcoin, it's just, what's it going to be? Like, what I don't understand at this point is why a lot of people don't really understand anything about it, insist on talking about it. Like, that's what I don't get is the people that's like, pay me in Bitcoin. What the, like, really? Like, do I have to pay you in Bitcoin? Is that what you want? Like,
because you can't go buy it with the money that I actually give.
Yeah, I can't pay you. And then you could put the money in Bitcoin. Like, do you not understand this that much? Like, it's like gold, right? Like that's how I've always used the metaphor.
Pay
it's like,
me pay me in gold. Like
the next time they say pay me in Bitcoin, I'm just going to hand them a handful of fist of diamonds. Here, I'm going to pay you in diamonds. It's the same thing. You know, they're not a renewal. It's not a renewable resource. It's not something.
Yeah, because you're Jewish. You have the diamonds laying around, right?
I don't, but I wish I did. Like that was another part of the conversation for entertainers. It's like, can they write that off? Like rappers wear diamonds like crazy. They got them on their teeth. Should they?
And the answer to that is yes.
I think so. I think they can't wear it on the street. If it's a chain that you couldn't and shouldn't wear on the street, then you should be able to write it off. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, but that's a whole nother world too. Not this world. So where's the future for your firm? I usually ask toward the end, like what's the future of the industry, but what's the future for your firm? Is it going to be just a boutique of different logistics or what's your vision there?
So had you have asked me this before COVID, I would have said, I want to grow it to be a big firm. And then COVID hit and we had to downsize a lot. And I was like, ooh, I like this. Like it's less stress. It can be more fun because, you know, you can be more nimble and do different things. And so I was really enjoying that. So now I have logistics, which I think we're going to stay relatively small. I'm not going to be running a big team on that. But logistics for designers, Now that I want to grow into a big company and, you know, potentially figure out a way to add value to that as well, whether it's building, you know, communities or starting a podcast. No, nothing. Too much work.
I can talk to you about starting a podcast. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, accountants that have podcasts. I'll have a niche there. So
yeah, there you go.
Well, yeah. So the reason I'm not going to jump to your reason. I don't want to answer that. Yeah. But why would you want to?
Because it's such a high demand, right? There's okay. So many people out there that need help. And
but isn't that the case with Logistis Incubator? There's so many people that need help, or are there not enough?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can have 1,000 of us, Scott. 1,000.
Well, I don't want to poke holes, but I think that
there wouldn't be enough of profitable. Us.
I think that you can command a higher price, and Logistis for Designers could be more profitable than. Yeah. And that's the way the angle that I'm looking at is, as you go vertical, you can go vertical with your price too, because you can be more profitable because you're offering a lot more value and you're going deeper. And then you can go get bigger, because then you really have a handle on how the firm's going to grow and your capacity. And it's just, there's not as many variables as doing everything for everybody. It's chaos in a firm that's an incubator, that's doing everything.
Yeah. So keep it small, keep it manageable. And then when you find something that you want to grow and build out because you're interested in that, then I think that's when you
sky's the limit.
Yeah. And then you switch and then you're like, wow, I can really help a lot of people out there in interior design and help them grow their business and help them unlock their own value and help them do so many different things that people don't necessarily think of accountants as being able to do. We've already shown that we can do that. And we already have waiting lists and we can't hire fast enough. And they're all good problems. And there's a whole lot of people out there that really need this. And then if 2008 happens again and the housing market crashes and contractors are out of work, you know, then it's like, then I'll just be able to lean into another vertical. Right.
Well, and you kind of turn the faucet on your highest leverage product, and it's like easier businesses can be a good product. But at the end of the day, we're all helping people, and you can help them more, and you can be of more help and of more service and feel more confident about that. If you have a servicing that can really help them, and specifically them, they're unique, you know, in that they are interior designers, they're designers, they're their problems. If when a new one comes to you and they talk to you about all of their problems, you can nod a lot because you know the answers to a lot of those things, I would think.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people come to us all the time. Like, do you have a contract template for this? Yeah, of course. Here's our template, run it by your lawyer and you're done. You don't have to pay thousands of dollars for that. So there's a lot of stuff that we offer to basically help you run your business and to help you grow and scale and diversify your revenue streams and all kinds of stuff. We are able to help them with all of that.
And Carbon's really leaned in a lot of that for us as firms. Carbon has helped. They've got a lot of content for accountants, the Carbon magazine, and to share.
They just came out with their Carbon community, right?
Yep. Yeah. There's a lot of communities for accountants, tax, Twitter, but you and I aren't on social. So it's like, can we go on to a community that's focused in that Carbon community? It's like, okay, we're safe in here. You know, maybe we're all Carbon users, but we're safe in there. We don't have to be distracted with all of these other things. Like when I go on Twitter, it's like time suck. Like what is going on in here? This is never going to change. And that's only because I get pulled into other things. It's not what anybody else is doing. It's like I get distracted. So.
But I tend to gravitate towards communities where I feel like I'm over my head. Sometimes when I'm in communities where I'm like, I have no idea what they're talking about. I'm like, ooh, I know I'm right where I need to be.
Can it be more or less like scaffolding where there's some people in there that really can help you? Yeah. And then there's others below you that you can really help within mm-hmm. that one community. I think that's a lot more fulfilling to me because then everybody can help everybody. Twitter is just a mob. Like
Twitter's just an angry mob of people. Yeah.
I don't know if everybody's angry though. Like when I go in there, I tend to focus way too much on the positive for any part of my life. So it's like everybody tends to be really happy there. But then I look at, you know,
maybe I have the wrong group.
Or maybe you're using the wrong Twitter app. Maybe I have a different Twitter. Maybe mine's a little less blue than yours. Yours is a little too blue or red. Do you use the red Twitter or the blue Twitter? right?
I don't know. I'm in California.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's all of these. We talked about influencers too, and it's like, you know, every one of these apps have people with a lot of followings. But then I look at it like this: you've got Ashton Kutcher. The guy was an actor, but he's also like a personality. I think he was one of the Twitter people, like one of the first like people that just played around on Twitter, right? Like, and I don't know, like I don't know enough about that place to even talk about it. But I think like to a certain degree, you got a lot of like in a podcast world. What about who's a popular podcaster? A lot of them are stand-up comedians, right? I think.
I don't know.
I don't listen to a lot of. No,
actually, maybe that's why yours is so positive. Maybe you follow all the stand-up comedians.
I know. I don't like to be negative. I don't like to even go on the negative tracks. So
no, I'm so far from that.
So let's wrap up with some more big talk. Did you do any drugs in Big Sur?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask that. I just knew it, because why not, right? I did not do any drugs that aren't illegal in California.
Did your husband?
No.
No drugs. I didn't do any drugs in Big Sur, but I've never been to Big Sur, so I can't really.
But the place we stayed, there was a bunch of cannabis being grown, and they had just abandoned it. They were like, whatever.
Wow.
Like this giant cannabis field that, like, as we're driving up, people just, you know, didn't care
did
about.
People just stop on the side of the road and grab some cannabis, or did they not know what to do with it? Like,
pretty much could have, I guess.
Yeah. Wouldn't know what to do with it. Like, I guess like you'd smoke it, right?
I know, but it's like, who's even got stuff to smoke it with?
Oh man,
get an apple.
You could, or a socket wrench if you're driving. I could probably think of a few different ones to smoke out, but I wasn't there. I didn't have a lighter either, so usually don't have a lighter on me. You need that first to be able.
Way
to.
Way far up the hill, away from those stores, you're like gonna pull Bible paper out.
Yeah. Well, one day when I'm in Santa Barbara.
Not right? One day in January.
I'm gonna be in California. That's exciting. Yeah, I'm excited. I love that. I didn't get into the Chili Peppers, but that's my whole world. It's like the sun may rise in the east, but settle in the final location of California. Like that's the sun sets there. And I think I'm gonna end up dying in California because that's where my sun will set. That's where the metaphor I'm using.
Yeah, it's great.
So where can anybody find you? Do you spend any time on LinkedIn for that?
I do actually spend a good amount of time on LinkedIn. So I think it's like Marissa Logistis on LinkedIn.
Marissa Logistis. Oh my gosh, you got a third last name? What's the reason?
Jones is taken. I should have stuck with McKinney.
I know.
I would have been able to have that. Marissa McKinney, LinkedIn. Yeah, whatever.
All right. Well,
all right. I bored you to death.
I thought this was a great episode, and it was just me. I didn't get bored at all during this. So thank
great,
you,
Scott.
Thank you.
So proud of you.
I'll do a fake round of applause if you want to. I hope a fake audience. So
I want some woohoos.
Yeah, we'll do some woohoos within the applause. It's got to actually be applause. I don't want just woohoos.
Awesome.
All right, Marissa.
All right. Talk to you later.